Rock. This ain't your grandma's radio station. Sorry, we only play rock music.
No synths allowed.
CJLO 1690 AM. Nothing but rock.
For CJLO News, I'm Donald Roberge. As of May, the Société des Alcools du Québec, or SAQ, will be increasing its prices. While wines that cost $15 or less will not be affected, wines and spirits above that price limit will be moderately raised, with greater increases applying to more expensive products. The SAQ says that the adjustment is needed in order to compensate for rising operating costs. The Provincial Crown Corporation is also in the midst of negotiating with its suppliers, so is not in a position to be specific about its new prices, though they did say that the average bottle would be raised by 0.6%, whether it be for a $20 bottle of wine or a $45 bottle of spirits. The STM has announced that work has begun at the Atwater Metro Station in order to create elevator access for the public. The city's transit corporation says that the project will see two elevators installed by December, a benefit to those with mobility issues and with luggage, as well as for the young and the elderly. Two shafts had already been built between 2019 and 2021 when the station's waterproofing membrane was being replaced. With approximately 5.9 million boardings annually, the Atwater station is the sixth busiest in the metro network. It will also be the 11th station on the Green Line to have elevator access, with the STM hoping to have all 41 stations accessible by 2030. Montreal housing committees are busy educating renters on their rights. Katie Brady has more.
Crise du logement, là, c'est pas des statistiques, c'est des vies humaines qui sont brisées.
In a press conference Tuesday, Quebec Solidaire spokesperson Gabriel Nadeau-Dubois appealed to members of the CAQ. He spoke about a family with four young children in Shawinigan facing eviction.
Je lance un appel très sérieux aux députés caquistes. Allez parler à la ministre de l'Habitation. Allez lui raconter à Mme Duranceau les histoires comme celle-là. Demandez-lui d'avoir un sursaut de lucidité, et on est dans les derniers milles de l'adoption du projet de loi, de bonifier son projet de loi pour qu'on agisse pour vrai sur la crise du logement.
Meanwhile, housing advocates are busy educating renters in Montreal about their rights. Christine Plowitsky is with Legis Action NDG, a local housing organization which has been hosting rent increase workshops at different venues around the community.
So I think the trickiest thing, or I guess the most common misconception, is that a rent increase is just like a fixed percentage that's fixed by the rental board, when actually the percentages that the rental board publishes is just the base of what a reasonable rent increase might be. And there are all sorts of other expenses that the landlord can claim on top of that base percentage. So for example, this year, if heating isn't included in the rent, you would be looking at a 4% increase, which is a very, very high increase, kind of not seen in the last 30 years, kind of high rent increase.
Plowitsky said the information about rent increases on the REGI website can be confusing, but tenants have other resources available to them, like public records and online tools from the Committee Logement.
There are some other pieces of information that are publicly available, such as municipal taxes and school taxes. So if people can do a calculation of what they should be expecting on their own, they can do that even before they receive the rent increase itself. So with having a number in mind means that you can interpret what the landlord is asking for better. Tenants always have the right to refuse their rent increase, but sometimes it's not in their best interest if when they go to court, the judge is going to increase their rent even higher than the landlord might be asking for. So that's kind of the trade-off.
Plowitsky emphasized a tenant's right to refuse or negotiate a rent increase.
And landlords really try to pressure tenants into signing things very quickly, trying to say that it's the only option. Most of the time on rent increase notices, there isn't an option that you can refuse the rent increase and stay in the apartment. They'll usually only show accept the rent increase or move out if you refuse the rent increase. But tenants should know that they always have the right to refuse the rent increase. And
the next rent increase workshop is Friday, February 16th at 2 p.m. at the Côte-Saint-Luc Library. You can find information to register for the workshops at the Legis Action NDG Facebook page. In Montreal for CJLO, I'm Katie Brady.
Welcome to Cadenza Montreal here on CJLO 1690. That was organist Isabelle Demers, who is currently associate professor of organ at McGill University. She'll be playing a concert this weekend of organ works at Salle Bourget on Sunday afternoon. That was the Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty arranged for organ. That's a scene from Act Two. So I had the pleasure of speaking with Isabelle about her upcoming concert, which we will hear that interview shortly. Just wanted to start with a few examples of her organ playing. The next one is Felix Mendelssohn's Symphony No. 5 in D minor. This is one of her transcriptions for organ. Organ is like an instrument that can do so much, and there's so many transcriptions of great symphonic works for organ out there because of all the notes and everything that an organ can play as opposed to a piano. Lots of times symphonies are transcribed for the instrument, which I find really fascinating. So this is one of Demers' own transcriptions. This is the second movement scherzo from Mendelssohn's Symphony No. 5 in D minor.
Thank you. dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics, sharing your passion since 2012.
Welcome back to Cadenza Montreal on CJLO 1690. I'm joined by organist Isabel Demers, who is currently Associate Professor of Organ at McGill University. She'll be performing a recital at Salle Bourget this weekend, joined by some of her students from her McGill studio. Isabel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you came to teach at McGill fairly recently, but you're from the Montreal area originally. How has that transition been coming back to your hometown?
It's really been lovely, actually. I'm very glad to be back here. I did my undergrad in Montreal, and then I left for a good number of years. So it's been good to get back, and Montreal has such an active organ scene. So I'm really delighted to be part of it now.
Yeah, exactly. And you were in Texas before this, right?
Yes, it's more of a shock moving to Texas than moving back from Texas.
Yeah, I was thinking it was kind of a bit of a culture shock between comparing like Texas to Montreal. What was the biggest culture shock when you lived there?
Well, actually, it's funny because Texas actually has quite the organ scene as well. We don't necessarily think of it, but there's lots of money, you know, oil money for one thing, and people go to church. So both of these things together means that you might have one street that will have, you know, four huge churches on the four corners, and each one of them has a multi-million dollar instrument. So it's actually a really good place to be for organ. But maybe in terms of culture shock, I just think like people in the South, it's like such a different pace of life and a different way of living in general, right? I mean, I don't want to sound negative, but everything is a little slower for one thing. It was a great experience. I'm glad to be back, and I'm glad to be in a country where you know, we get like half an inch of snow. We don't actually close school for 8 days. So.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Definitely more equipped to deal with the snow and the winter weather here in Montreal. In terms of this concert coming up this weekend, I know that it pays tribute to one of Quebec's great organists, Rachel Loran. I know you were a frequent collaborator with her.
That's correct. Yeah, she was one of my very good friends.
Yeah. And can you talk a little bit more about like kind of how this concert came about?
So actually this concert, we started talking about this concert before she even got diagnosed with cancer. So I think in just when I moved back, so September 2022, the artistic director at Salle Bourget, Olivier Godin, was one of my classmates when I was an undergrad student. And so he told me that Rachel would be the first composer in residence at Salle Bourget. And so he asked if we could do a concert of her works. So that's how this concert came about. And then obviously, you know, when she passed away, then it became a memorial concert. But yes, so I think the idea was to, you know, try to pair her works with maybe like other pieces in the past that had inspired them. You know, she was somebody who loved to play older music and then use it as a basis for new compositions. So that's what we've tried to do a little bit, is sort of take the original and then show how she's transformed it.
Okay, interesting. So you kind of paired up the old with the new, as it were?
Exactly, yeah. So for example, the two last works of hers on the program are sets of variations on Baroque pieces. So one is by Zweling. Actually, we say Zweling, we're not sure who wrote it exactly. It might actually be Scheidt, but you know, somebody from the early North German organ schools around 1600. And then she explains herself that she always loved that piece. You know, she learned it as a student and she always wanted to do something with it. So then she wrote variations on that tune. And then the other one is the Fantasie and Fugue in G minor of Bach, which really every organist knows. I mean, it's one of the great works in our repertoire. And then she used the theme of the fugue as the basis of a set of variations. And really, she takes it, you know, way beyond what Bach does with it. So I think it would be nice for people to hear like the original work, and then also just to see like how far you can take this when you go into a more modern harmonic language versus the language.
Right. Yeah. And in terms of, I know, like kind of adapting works for organ, even when the work was originally for organ, I feel like, you know, transcriptions are also a big thing in organ repertoire. Like, I'm so curious about how you sort of go about like taking those pieces and sort of adapting it to how interesting the organ is as an instrument.
I think in a way the transcriber plays the same role as the conductor a little bit. You know, when you have a conductor, he's going to look at the score and think like, okay, here, this is what we want to hear. Here's the melody, here's the bass, you know, here are the important things. And I think the transcriber does the same thing, you know, sort of figure out which lines you really need to cover and play and which lines you can drop, which are maybe not so essential. So a good transcriber should be like a good conductor. You know, if you have a bad conductor in Stravinsky, you won't have any idea what's going on because all the lines are played at the same volume. But a good one will tell the trombones to actually take it down a little bit for a few measures so you can hear, I don't know, the bassoon or the flute or whomever has the tune at that time. So I think it's a question of just, you know, listening to the piece and trying to figure out what should come out and what shouldn't. And then figuring out a way to do all of this with 10 fingers. 10 toes or 2 feet.
Yeah, exactly. Has there been like a transcription of yours or that you've played of someone else's that has really like stood out to you over the years?
I've done a lot of ballet music, and I think perhaps more recently I've done, I've played actually all three of Stravinsky's early ballets, so Firebird, Petrushka, Rite of Spring, and I've also done some of Prokofiev, Romeo and Juliet. And I mean, I just really love that music, and we don't really have Russian music for organ, so that's as good as it gets for us is taking orchestra stuff and transcribing it. And it's funny because Stravinsky sounds really good on the organ, actually. I'm not quite sure why, but it really works, and he hated the instrument, so I think it's
kind of, yeah, showing him what the organ could do sort of in the modern context.
You wonder what instruments he heard, but he said that it was a monster which never breathes. So
harsh. Yeah.
Harsh. Yeah.
I never thought about how there's not as much Russian music for organ, but yeah, that's true.
It's two things, right? The Orthodox Church does not allow instruments in services, so there was never a church tradition with organ. And so I think as a result, they just didn't really have the instruments. So if you don't have instruments, obviously nobody will write for it.
Right. But I know, like, you know, Montreal and Quebec has a great tradition of like these instruments and these, you know, these beautiful venues. I was curious too, like what kind of, like what were your kind of favorite places to play here in the city?
Well, the nice thing about Montreal, I think, is we have lots of fabulous instruments, but we also have different types of organs. So, you know, you might have a place where all the instruments sound the same. In Montreal, we have such variety. There's a church called Saint-Jean-Baptiste, which has a 1915 Casavant organ, more sort of French Romantic style, and that is an incredibly beautiful instrument. There's two German organs that are great at the Oratory and also at the Church of the Immaculate Conception. And I think, you know, I need to mention that Redpath Hall at McGill also has a really, really great organ in the French Baroque style. So if you want to play anything that, you know, Louis the 14th would have heard, that's the type of organ you want from it.
Right. So like the organs are kind of constructed where like it's like kind of period instruments in a way.
Yeah, exactly. You might have like an eclectic organ which plays everything okay or decently, but nothing especially well. And that was a trend in organ building in the 20th century. But I think the more recent trend is to build organs that really focus on a specific era and repertoire. And we're so lucky in Montreal to have many of those. So then if you want to play your Bach, you know, you can go to Immaculate Conception and it just sounds absolutely terrific. you know, French music from the 19th century, then you'd go to Saint-Jean-Baptiste and it sounds equally terrific, just like a different type of sound.
Right, exactly. And what about the organ at Salborgie? Like, what have you played on this instrument often?
Not very often. When I was a student here, it didn't exist. I actually think Salborgie didn't exist when I was a student. I think it was still Erskine and American. We've been a few times with the students. So we're actually splitting the concert on two organs. So we're playing the older, the Baroque repertoire on their instrument, which is a lovely mechanical action organ, same builder as the one we have at McGill. So it feels very familiar since we're used to playing this type of action all the time. And then there's an organization in Montreal called the CIOC, the Canadian International Organ Competition, and they have this electronic organ called the Bach Mobile, which is an organ on wheels that you can just, I mean, you can play outside, you can play really anywhere you want. And so they'll wheel it out to Salle Bourgie for the concert and we'll play the more modern pieces on it. And it's great. It's a new technology that was invented a few years ago. So they go to these churches around the world and they sample every single pipe. And so then when you play on these samples, it's a bit like playing a recording.
Interesting.
The sample we're using for the concert is from the Church of Saint-Étienne in Caen in Normandy. And that organ was built in 1885. So it's like we're playing an 1885 organ.
Wow. So yeah, so it's like electronically kind of reproduced the sound.
Yeah, but sampled. So it's different technology than the older electronic organs. So as a result, actually, if you have a good sound system, it really sounds like you're playing a recording of the instrument.
Oh, wow. That's great. And so this will be kind of, you said you split it up between like the contemporary pieces are more on the more modern instrument and then vice versa.
Yeah, the Bourgie, the valve organ in the Bourgie is an unequal temperament. And Racha's music, she just could not stick to a key. She modulates all over the place. And so we tried, but it was a little spicy with the older temperament. As soon as you got past, you know, three flats or something, it was a little painful, perhaps, for modern ears. So everybody starts on the Baroque organ, and then we'll just walk across the stage to the other console and play the rest of the program there.
For sure. And so, yeah, I mean, this concert is with some of your students from McGill. How has it been to put the concert together with them and kind of create this program?
I think it's been great because, you know, many of them did not know that repertoire quite as well. So it's been nice for them to discover this. Of course, when we started talking about it, I was hoping that they could actually play the music for Rachel, but yeah, that sadly never happened. Yeah, and some of the pieces they're playing, I actually didn't know myself. So it's been great to discover them without having to actually put in the work, you know, myself. Her music is very difficult, so it's been nice that I could just come to the lesson and hear the piece, as opposed to having to spend hours on the keyboard myself.
Right, exactly. Because I know Rachel wrote like extensively, you know, for this instrument.
And it's very difficult usually. She was a very kind person, but she was not always kind to the performer. She really wrote things that were quite challenging technically. So yeah, so it takes a lot of work to put everything together, I guess.
Right. And I know with like such a huge catalog of works, you know, narrowing it down for this concert, was that difficult?
I mean, that was difficult. I should also add that one of the students is not playing music of Rachel. She's playing music of Raymond Davalui, who was Rachel's teacher. And so this is a piece that she had already learned. So it made sense, I think, to include it. It'd be hard to do a memorial concert for Rachel without including music of Davalui, who was just so important in her life.
Yeah, teachers, you know, are so foundational to as musicians, as composers, everything.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and these two were especially close. So I think that makes sense. And, you know, I think she would have been really happy that his music was also included.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, just kind of winding things down, you know, just want to end with like, you know, since this is a memorial concert, unfortunately, even if it wasn't intended that way, I just hope we could end with speaking a little bit more about her and like how, like what you appreciated the most about being a collaborator with her, playing her music, being a friend.
So, well, I met Rachel when I was quite young. There used to be this show on CBC called Faites vos gammes. that really dates me now, but and it was always pairing young musicians with a professional, and just by a total coincidence, the week that I was there to play piano, actually, she was the professional of the week. Well, I met her at that point, and then when I was a teenager, I'd go to the concerts at the Oratoire. But I really got to know her after 2009, and this is really somebody that I talk with, you know, pretty much every week, sometimes every day. I think you'd ask anybody and they would tell you that she was the most positive person, the most positive presence. You know, if you just told her you were playing her music, she would send you back an email with about 20 exclamation marks and like little hearts and emojis and cat pictures. And, you know, I think, and I mean that as a compliment, she had, you know, the mental age of, you know, a 5-year-old. You know, she was just like very happy and all of that. I think this was everybody's opinion of her, but then, you know, you might send her a recording and she would just tell you like, oh, that's fabulous. And then if you said no, what do you actually think? And then she would send you a very detailed list of comments. And I think lots of people never got the comments because they never asked. They were happy to just be told they were great. But what I really liked is actually she could be very, very demanding and specific. And it's great to have that in your career. It's great to have people like that that really hold you accountable. So I think after you graduate, you don't have a teacher anymore. And so it's sort of you and the music. So for me, it was great to have somebody like her that would listen to me play and tell me like, you know, I think this is not good enough, or, you know, or you should do this differently. Or and I'd also say it was not a one-way street, though. She was also very open to suggestions. So if you change things in her music, sometimes she said no, and sometimes she was actually happy with it. So it just depended on, I guess, you know, what you were doing exactly. But yeah, I think, you know, obviously her influence in the organ world was like immense. And I think you can see that now that just everybody is playing her music, you know, everywhere, even all the way in China, you know, so she had quite the international career by the end. Yeah, so I'm happy we can do this. And I definitely plan on, you know, promoting her music more in the years to come and make sure that she's not forgotten, though I don't think that will happen.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's the time we have for today, but thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Again, that was Isabel Demers, professor of organ at McGill University. The concert she and I spoke about is happening this Sunday at 2:30 at Salle Borghi in downtown Montreal. And she'll be joined by 3 of her McGill students, and the concert's called A Musical Voyage with the Organ. So that should definitely be interesting to see them go back and forth between the two instruments, the organ that has been built into the Salle Borghi space, and the traveling Bachmobile. So pivoting a little bit now, I think the second half of the show will kind of be more devoted to music. And of course, thematically, I was thinking a lot about, of course, today is February 14th. It is Valentine's Day. And, you know, there are plenty of playlists out there, you know, about like classical music for Valentine's Day and all that. But and there are a few that everybody knows, but I think that there are some really interesting ones that have become more known as of late that could kind of fall into this category. And one of them is the composer Florence Price, who has, of course, been has really risen to a great level of prominence in the classical community. This Black woman composer who went underappreciated for so many years. Her music is now being platformed and played all over the world. And she wrote some really beautiful, lush, lyrical pieces. And this piece, Adoration, is one of her more famous ones. There's this beautiful transcription for violin and orchestra. So I thought I would start with that one now. This is violinist Randall Goosby, joined by the Philadelphia Orchestra and conducted by Yannick Nizet-Séguin. Seems there's been a little bit of an issue with the playback of this currently, so give me one second while I fix this. Yes, Florence Price's music is really lovely, and so I really want to hear us play this. Let us give us one more chance. This is Florence Price's Adoration. Welcome back to CJLO 1690. That was Florence Price's Adoration, an arrangement there for violin and orchestra. The violinist there, Randall Goosby, and the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducted by Yannick Nezet-Séguin. I think that the violin is such a beautiful instrument, and when we're talking, especially when we're talking about this kind of like romantic, lush sound. And there's another piece for violin and orchestra, originally for violin and orchestra, that came to mind when sort of staying in the same theme. And that's the Max Bruch Violin Concerto No. 1 in G minor. This is one of those pieces where once I heard it for the first time, I heard it multiple times over the course of a few weeks as this piece was in the rehearsal process. And the second movement was always very moving to me and something that I would listen to outside of rehearsal time, which for me was somewhat rare when being surrounded by classical music all day. But this is a really beautiful recording of violinist Julia Fischer playing the second movement Adagio. This is the Tonhalle Orchestra Zurich, conducted by David Zinman.
Thank you. Pansy, Annie, bonjour, hello. This is composer Andrew Balfour inviting you to experience Isfachiwin, a musical journey bridging cultures and perspectives. It is both a personal journey and evocative testament to the transformative power of music. This recording features Calgary's luminous voices with the incredible Jessica McMahon and Walter McDonald Whitebear on flutes. It is my hope that this album deepens our understanding of Indigenous storytelling. Isfachiwin is available now wherever you listen to music.
Welcome back to Cadenza Montreal here on CJLO 1690. I was talking earlier about how the violin is really one of those instruments that appears a lot in romantic music, not just romantic as the musical genre time period, but like romantic as the adjective descriptor. And I think piano is also one of those instruments that just can be so breathtakingly beautiful in this context. The next piece I have up here is by the French pianist Jean-Yves Thibaudet, and this is Edward Elgar's Salut d'Amour in E major. This is one of those pieces that does appear on many of those, you know, best classical music, best romantic classical music playlists, but, you know, they're not, the selections aren't all cheesy. There are always some good ones in there, and I think this piece is beautiful, and this arrangement for piano specifically, I think, has a definite quality to it that I really love. So let's take a listen to French pianist Jean-Yves Thibaudet.
Thank you.
That was Edward Elgar's Salut d'Amour, arranged there for piano by pianist Jean-Yves Thibaudet. Before I wrap up the show for today, I thought that I would play one last song. This one is relatively new for me, this specific arrangement, but the piece itself is, of course, one of the most famous classical pieces of all time, which is J.S. Bach's Air on a G String. But I heard this last week at a concert, the concert with Ellen Torrey and Carrie Bursey that I interviewed Ellen about last week. And this is Air on a G String in an arrangement for guitar and voice. This arrangement was done by Oscar Castro Neves, the Brazilian guitarist and bossa nova pioneer. And he recorded this on his album from 1987. And I just think it's so beautiful. It just really spoke to me in that moment and continues to speak to me as I listen to it again. And I tracked it down just to play it on the show today. And I do think that it kind of fits in the theme as well with the whole Valentine's Day thing. You know, it's not just about romantic love, but to do this, to take this piece of music and to really make it one's own and their own arrangement, I think that's a kind of love too, and it's really beautiful. So thank you for listening to this week's episode. I'll be back next week as usual, and enjoy Oscar Castro Neves and Air on a G-String. Thank you.
listening.